Welcome to Mayfield Baptist Church. We are very excited to have you with us here. We do encourage you to follow us on our social media, which you can access through our website at mayfieldbaptist.com. Please feel free to like and subscribe to this podcast to keep you up to date with our latest messages. We do hope you enjoy this recent message from MBC, that it may help you connect to God, grow in your faith, and serve in your own context.
We launch into a new series this week, and the series is called Risky Business. And we're going to consider how we as flawed humans work with God, because the way we see the world sometimes isn't quite the way God sees the world. There are big gaps, I think, between what God thinks is possible and what we think is possible, and what he calls us to do in his plan for the world. I want to call that the risky gap. We stand on one side thinking there's no way I could ever get to the other side. And there's this big space between which we think we can't breach. But God knows that we can with him. The question is, how willing are we to take those risks? To step into the plans that he has for us as individuals and for us as his church? So over the next few weeks, each speaker is going to look at a biblical hero or biblical character and delve into how they responded to that risky gap, how they lived, how they moved, and how they acted with God, and how he called them to do what they thought was impossible, or beyond their abilities, or beyond their situation. Because we need to remember that they were ordinary people just like us. We tend to forget that. They had the same struggles, they had the same issues, they had the same doubts and same fears. So what can their stories teach us about how we as a church and as individuals take those risky steps for God? How can we take that step in faith and trust that God will deliver and God will turn up to cover that gap that we just can't see a way across? Well, I'm the first off the rank, so I get to set the tone. And I'm going back to Exodus. For those of you who have done or are in the middle of doing or are looking forward to doing the new gifting series that we're rolling out through the church, and here's a plug for that. What's surprising to lots of people is most of the stuff you look at isn't about the gifts. It's looking at how you relate to God, how you personally relate with God, and that is done through biblical characters and how we respond to God's wisdom, faithfulness, and power, and how we all have biases in how we see God and how we interact with God. And we look at this by identifying with biblical characters, and we explore how they and we related to God and how lopsided our interaction with God can sometimes be, and how the goal is to become more evenly balanced with God. So I encourage you all to get involved. Either come and see me about the one-day intensives that we run, or look at joining a home group, or if your home group's running, talk to me about doing it in your home group. There have been some very interesting responses. There have been times where I've seen people in tears when they've looked at stuff. Even I've been choked up when I was looking at my biblical character. So my character today, and it was the character that I related to in the gifting study, is Moses. I want to look at who he is and who he was, and I'll talk a little bit about how I identified with him and how my encounter with him left me a bit raw. Now, when we think of our biblical heroes, we often remember their achievements and the great things they did, their great moments, their big successes. For this is Moses. Okay, Moses leading the people, standing up to Pharaoh, the plagues, leading tens of thousands of people on an extended picnic and arriving at their destination a little bit later than the brochure implied. The story is filled with miracle after miracle, God turning up and doing some really great things. Moses putting his life on the line to save the people from God's anger again and again. Moses standing as a shining beacon of leadership and confidence. But I don't want to look at that. I want to look at who Moses was and how God still used him in his bold plans. We often don't look at or remember the not-so-shiny stuff about our heroes, their faults and their failings. We get overawed by how God does these wonderful things with people. And that's the beauty of the Bible and the wonder of God. He takes weird, weak, mixed up, corrupted, ordinary people and through them works his plans. And for Moses, we often overlook his character flaws, as his achievements in many ways overshadow them. But I think if we look at his issues and see how God still used him, we can be confident that God can use us. So let's have a look at Moses in detail and along the way talk about how this impacted me as well. Moses' life can be broken into three sections, and I want to look at each part in particular. So we've got growing up in the palace as a prince, the years he spent hiding in Midian, and that extended picnic in the desert with just a few of his friends and mates. We don't know much about the first part. We read the story about, you know, Moses in the bulrushes. You get that in Sunday school many, many times. Create little crafts and things. And Pharaoh's daughter. As a result of some smart thinking on his mum and dad and siblings, Moses survives what he shouldn't have survived. And then ends up in a rather special place. And then we get this one line in Exodus. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labour. That's 40 years of life summed up in one sentence. But what can we know about those 40 years? Well, he lived in a palace. He was a member of the royal family. He would have been well educated. He would have been trained to be a warrior and a leader of men. He would have lacked for nothing. Any demand that he had, he would have been obeyed immediately. He would have been bowed down to by servants and slaves. And like the rest of his royal family, he would have treated people beneath him with contempt and disdain. But at some point, he learns what his true origins are. We don't know when, but I think it's safe to assume that it was later in life. As once handed to the princess after he was weaned, his contact with his family would have been cut off. He would not have been allowed. Royalty do not mix with slaves. So Moses grew up understanding that he was an Egyptian. And at some point, his worldview and how he fitted into it was shattered because he found out he wasn't Egyptian, he was a Hebrew. So now the doubts begin to come. Who is he? Who knows? Will he be kicked out of the palace? What will happen to him? Is he a slave or is he a prince? Who are his people? And then we come to this. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labour. He begins to try to understand his people. He begins to identify with them. And when he sees an overseer beating a Hebrew slave, he gets angry and hits back. Whether it was intentional or accidental, he kills him. Surely now he will identify with his true people. But as most of us know, that's not what happened. The next day, when he finds two Hebrews fighting and he tries to intervene, saying, "Brother, shouldn't be arguing with brother," their response was not what he expected. "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" They saw him as an Egyptian, not as one of them. So now he had no people. So what does he do? He runs. This is Moses, the great leader of Israel. He's running away from both his families, his birth family and his adopted family. Both have rejected him. He has no home, no ties, no foundation, no future. Everything he believed and trusted is gone. He is a broken man. So he goes from royal prince, with all that entails, to a nobody leading sheep out in the middle of nowhere. So So the next 40 years are spent in the middle of nowhere, of no significance, raising a family and raising sheep. It's a long time to ponder your problems, isn't it? And your doubts, and your failings, but God had plans, even for this confused and lost man. Earlier I mentioned that Moses was the character I'd identified with in the series. Well, this section is where it really hit home for me. We come to the burning bush. Do we have a burning bush? Yay! Just to put it quickly, Moses is out doing stuff with his sheep when he notices there's a bush on fire. And he goes to investigate. God calls his name and Moses responds, "Here I am." Then God tells him he's going to go back to Egypt to get the Hebrews out of slavery. All good. But let's listen to the conversation. This is the interesting thing. All that baggage, all those doubts, all that stuff that's going on inside of Moses comes out in this conversation. So God says to Moses, "So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Moses responds, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And he's probably thinking, "I'm not an Egyptian or a Hebrew, so why should they, any of them, listen to me?" God then goes on to explain how it'll all pan out, all the wonders, the events, and to go to the elders first and tell them everything about this. Then Moses says, "What if they don't believe me or listen to me or say the Lord did not appear to you?" Probably thinking, "Why should they believe anything I say? I'm just a nobody." Then we get some miraculous signs, God showing Moses that he is God and he has power. And then Moses comes back and says, "Pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue." And he's probably thinking, "And the last time I tried to speak to anyone, I got in real trouble, got rejected and kicked out." God's response, "I will put words in your mouth." And then Moses' last response, "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." Probably thinking, "Okay, I don't think I can do it." Now, at this point, God gets a bit angry at Moses. What more does he have to do to convince Moses that he's going to be able to do it? So he sends Aaron to speak for him. So from this conversation, we can see that Moses is not this strong, confident leader that we all come to see and admire. He's not sure. He's not trusting that God will actually even turn up. He doesn't want to be the front man. He sees himself as a nobody. He has nothing to offer or give. How often do we respond like that? I know for me, it was a very similar discussion / argument. Who here argues with God? Come on, be honest. Good. It's a great thing to argue with God. So this is how my discussion went with God many years ago. "God, I want you to go to Bible college." Me, "I'm not smart enough. I only went to year 10. I'm just a tradie. I don't have the time to go. I've got a family to look after. And it's too far away. I mean, Sydney's the end of the universe, isn't it? What's the point of it anyway? Why would I even bother going?" "God, I want you to be a pastor." Me, freaking out crazily. "But I can't speak in public. I freeze. I am the behind-the-scenes person, not an upfront person. God, trust me." Me, after more roadblocks, "You'll have to talk to me privately about all the things I put in the road." And grudging yeses. "Okay, but I'm not promising anything big." God's response, "I can work with that." My sense when I read Moses' discussion is that he came to a similar point. No arguments left. He had to move, and maybe reluctantly, he packs up and goes to Egypt. He was going back to a risky situation. No one really would remember him. It had been 40 years ago. Even most of the royal family were gone. It says in Exodus, "Now the Lord said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you are dead." He was a nobody now, stepping into a place where he was about to demand things of the most powerful man on earth. But God could work with that. God could work, can work with our weak and sometimes reluctant obedience. We are just called to get moving. The interesting thing about Moses is that his lack of confidence and hesitation to trust does not go away. It keeps cropping up. It comes up again and again. After his first big encounter with Pharaoh, which leads to things getting tougher for the Hebrews, Moses comes back and says to God, "Why, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on this people, and you have not rescued your people at all." He's not really trusting the events, is he? Later, after the people don't listen to God's message. But Moses said to the Lord, "If the Israelites will not listen to me, why would Pharaoh listen to me, since I speak with faltering lips?" But God still worked with him and through him to get the job done. And his doubt, in the end, was the reason he didn't get to go to the promised land. In Numbers, "But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'Because you did not trust in me enough to honour me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them.'" His doubt and lack of trust keeps coming up again and again. Despite everything he saw and achieved, and I'm sure just like Moses, many of us struggle with doubt. I know I do. Even when I know all the things God has done in and through me, I struggle to believe and trust. But as we look at the big, risky things God asks us to do, if we say yes, even with those doubts, even with those issues, he can work with that. He can work with our lack of confidence, lack of belief, lack of trust, lack of ability, because we know that he's done it so many times in the past. When it comes to our heroes of the faith, we focus on the great things God did with and through them. And when we do this, we can put them so high up on a pedestal that it makes it impossible for us to even think that we can be anywhere like them. But when we look at the whole person, we need to look at their struggles. And for me, that was Moses, because his struggles sounded so much like mine when I read that story. Their failings are our failings, but their failings and their lack of confidence and their lack of trust and their doubt makes God's work even bigger. Shows up God to be the great God he actually is. God calls us all, just like the heroes we like to read in the Bible, to step into that risky gap. The gap where we can't make it work. The gap where only God can make it work. The gap where we have all our doubts, all our fears and concerns. The gap that if we step out, God will turn up. All he's asking us to do is take that step. To take that step into that risky gap. And he can work with that. Let's pray. Father God, you don't ask us to do anything that you know that with you we cannot do. You are a great God. You want to use us to achieve your goals, your mission on this world. And for some reason, you decide to work through us with all our foibles, all our faults, all our doubts and insecurities. You choose to work with us. All you ask is that we say yes, and you can work with that.